Welcome to the Marketing Society podcast. I'm your host, Mike Pigger, editor at the Society. And for today's pod, we're going to be talking about humanizing brands and brands being more human. And I'm delighted to welcome Ali Payne, VP of Marketing for the Heineken Company, and Ashley Cooksley, MD North America at the Social Element. Welcome to both of you.
Hi. Hi, nice to meet you.
So we're just talking. I'm obviously in London at the moment, and you guys, are you both New York, if I got that right? Is that where you are? Somewhere around
yes,
there? Yes,
I'm in New York.
Yeah, I'm down the coast, North Carolina.
Oh, okay. we're talking, we were talking just before we started of the fact that I might have some thunderstorms here. So if you hear crashing and banging, that's what that is. But hopefully that won't happen as of yet. So to start off, I wanted to do a brief intro for both of you, kind of what you do, what your roles are. Should we start with you, Ali?
Yeah, sure. So I lead the marketing for the Mexican beer portfolio at Heineken USA here. So my key brands are Dos Equis and Tecate. Dos Equis is very strong in the Sunbelt states, down in Texas. It's a massive brand. And then Tecate, very strong over on the West Coast, a very targeted brand to the Mexican-American consumer. So I handle marketing across both those.
Sounds good. Cool. And Ashley, can you also say what you do and also maybe what the Social Element do as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So I lead the North American side of the Social Element. We're a global social media agency, and we work with some of the world's largest brands to make sure they have genuine human connection with their consumers on social. And by the way, I just want to say big fan of Dos Equis and Tecate down here in North Carolina.
Yes, great.
Sounds good. I've not actually heard of either of those drinks, but I'm sure they're great.
Yeah, so when they don't exist over in the UK. Maybe right. Soon. Let's see.
Not yet.
We'll talk about that in a bit. So yeah, actually, I guess on the sort of being more human element, obviously, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things that gets talked about is nothing's sort of brought people together quite like a pandemic. And I just wanted to see from a leadership point of view, how this year has been for both of you. You know, have you helped sort of adapt and change the ways that you've led, and what sort of things has it taught you? Who wants to jump in?
I can kick off. I would say that, you know, when I said this to my team, that it's been the toughest, almost testing year for me as a leader, because leading through crisis and, converting everyone to being working from home and trying to establish a team and a rhythm with your team when you're all remote, as well as the pandemic and considering people's safety as number one and health, you know, and health and the impact it's had on their lives. It really tested my leadership skills, you know, making sure that the team were number one, safe, number two, business continuity. And that was always priority. Number one, safety, number two, business continuity. And, you know, the constant juggling that we had to do to keep, marketing on track, to keep the business on track, dealing with supply crises because we had brewery slowdowns, et cetera. So, everything came our way. Everything was thrown our way. But I think what the pandemic taught us is that you can be very resilient and incredibly entrepreneurial when, when you can't do, you know, production in person, or, you know, you need to source something from a different area because it's, you know, the breweries are closed in one place. So for me, it was really pushing my team to think out of the box and how we were going to do things in a new way, you know? Mm. So, I think personally, we've become much more nimble, entrepreneurial, and we won't want to go back to some of the things and the old habits we did in the past.
Mm. It's that sort of element of every company kind of thinking a bit like a startup over the past 12 months.
Exactly. You know, whereas, you know, traditionally, because we're a bigger organization and we rely on, you know, sort of certain ways of doing things, we just had to become more nimble. And, you know, I think also whilst, you were aware of your, you know, my team's sort of personal lives and personal situations, but we often had quite a separation between personal life and business life. They started to sort of slightly merge because we were all working from home. So you know, we're dealing with people who had toddlers, you know, on your calls, and you adapted around people's lives, and you realized people, you sort of saw the whole of people versus just their business life, which was sort of unique and nice. And, you know, I think that human connection became really, really even more important through the pandemic.
How about you, Ashley? We'll delve a bit more into the human connection side of things, I imagine.
I know. Yeah, I completely agree with Ali. I love what you just said about you see the whole of people. That's really, I think, what this past year has been about. Fortunately for us, we've always been a remote-based company. We've been here for almost 19 years. And, you know, a year ago, we were at a place where we didn't feel like we had to explain remote working as much, but we still did. You know, we're still talking to new clients and saying, it's okay, you know, this is how we work and this is how we, you know, stay connected and how we know what's going on. And I think this past year is just, it's been good in that way because our clients, our team members, we all get it. You know, we all get what it's like now. And it still challenged us. You know, we've been doing this for 19 years and it was still a huge challenge because not only are you dealing with a global pandemic, as you said, but you're dealing with not only making sure that your team is safe and healthy, like Ali said, but we're an agency. And so we have a bunch of clients and it's always about making sure that they also feel supported and they felt safe and, you know, that we were super flexible for them. And so that's always a difficult balance when, you know, you have a team that may be going through their own things. They're definitely going through a lot of difficulties, you know, all the parents that had kids at home all of a sudden. I mean, I remember like we were having to tell people like, if you've got a homeschool, that's fine. We're going to change all of our meetings. We're going to cancel as many meetings as we possibly can. And I had kids here, I was homeschooling and I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm going to be off for the next 2 hours. I got to do math or something like that. And I just think, you know, as a leader, the big thing for us as an executive team was that we demonstrated what it was like, that we were constantly articulating, I'm going to go help my child now. I need to take a break. My dog's just run into the room. Sorry, you know, he's barking all over the place. And so we definitely heard from our team members that they appreciated that we were also very human. It made them feel more comfortable to say, I need help or I need time away. And also just the same for our clients as well, just making sure they felt supported. Our big focus this past year was with our clients was just support and maintain a relationship. This isn't about selling. This isn't about trying to grow this account into this big thing. You know, it's really just about how can we be there for them right now? Because everyone's just going through such a difficult time. Yeah. So yeah, certainly challenging and also rewarding in a lot of ways.
Well, I guess that kind of leads us on a little bit to kind of the whole connecting with customers or connecting with clients. Like you say, has that changed over time? Because I guess in the start of the pandemic, no one knew when the end of the pandemic might be. So in the early days, was it all about support and has that changed and what has it sort of become now? How have you both sort of found that sort of evolution?
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely looked at the evolution of sort of the pandemic. You know, I think from a brand perspective, you know, when the sort of early shutdown, I'm talking March 2020, you know, there was a lot of criticism of the advertising on television around like, we're here for you. This is the, you know, everyone, the sort of the same ads just started appearing, you know, around with sort of weeping people and, you know, and we discussed a lot around when should we lean in as a brand? We're very social brands, right? Like we live, you know, people get together and have beers with friends. You know, was that our moment to say anything? And we felt that actually, you know, people are much more focused on their own personal safety. You know, do they have job security? So it wasn't our role to lean in there. Where we could lean in over time was in support of things like when the bars reopen up, like how do we support the on-premise, how do we support them to get back their businesses? We had on the Dos Equis brand, which is very heavily, pub and bar focused draft business. You know, we had a dose of good program, which enabled them to get back on their feet and, do sampling with consumers and things like that. So we adapted depending on, where the brand should have a voice, and it didn't look at odds with how we were talking during the pandemic.
Mm. So sort of treading quite a fine line and being very mindful of sort of when you're saying things and what you're saying and why you're saying them, I suppose, even more so than the past.
Yes. And we did a lot of consumer research, so our insights team on the consumer sentiment around the pandemic and how it was evolving. And in the US, the US is not it's not blanket, what happens on the East Coast versus the West Coast versus the South is very different. And the dynamic and what people were experiencing was very different across the country. So, we did a lot of listening to consumers around their sentiment and when we felt it was the right time for the brands to speak or not.
Yeah, I forget that sometimes. So I guess, you've had different vaccine rollouts state by state, and I guess that's affected how people have, come out of lockdown or come out of the pandemic or not as well. So you have to be like incredibly nuanced and delicate in depending on where you're putting your messaging.
Absolutely. Ashley will know from in New York, which was the sort of epicenter of the pandemic in March, April, with very draconian shutdowns versus the South, which kept open for majority of the time. So their experience, your consumer's experience in Texas is very different from your consumer experience in New York. So it was flexing our messages that way.
I guess that kind of leads a little bit on to just generally the last few years, not just the pandemic, but kind of brands getting involved in sort of social and political events and things. And, where do you draw the line? Where do you get involved? Where do you sort of say, actually, we're taking a stand on this thing? Or if you, on the opposite side of things, if you don't take a stand on a thing, you're also going to get criticized potentially. So you can be the wrong side of the fence or just criticized for not even choosing a side. Like, how do you both sort of manage that? I mean, Ashley, how do you go about advising brands what to do?
Yeah, that's interesting, because I was thinking about that, Ali, when you were speaking about, how it's different in different parts of the states. And then you throw in the fact that this was just a very interesting year from social political issues. So you've got, the pandemic, but you also have all these other things that are happening as well. And brands had to really pay attention this year. And, I think it was really smart that Ali is doing a lot of social listening. What are consumers talking about? What's important to them? What's resonating with them? What do they expect brands to do? I definitely feel that this past year that consumers have said, you have to have an opinion about this. I want my brands that I buy to have an opinion. I want to know where they stand. I know for sure, Gen Z millennial research shows that there's more brand affinity towards brands that have, some sort of political or social stance. But, that kind of delicate balance of, well, when do I join that conversation? I mean, Ali, I'm sure that must have been top of mind as well for you all, but it was certainly a big focus for us this past year in terms of providing a view and guidance on, when do you enter that conversation? When is the right moment? But part of being human as well is getting it wrong, learning from those mistakes, saying I made a mistake. So that's one thing that we also, say a lot to our clients is, you're not going to get this right 100% of the time. You definitely need to be constantly listening and hearing what they're saying in response. And, when you make a mistake, transparency is key. And that goes a long way with consumers, especially this past year.
Do you think some of it might be also like safeguards and kind of how you set up the business from top to bottom in terms of, making it as diverse and inclusive as possible is probably going to help you? In all ways, rather than not just when you encounter tricky issues,
Yeah. I mean, And I think that's the one thing that consumers 100% expect is that if you're going to talk the talk, you better be walking the walk as well. So a lot of focus on, you know, what are companies doing for diversity and inclusion? You know, what kind of opinions are they putting out there, but are they also embodying those values within their own company? I think a lot of those things came to light as well. And, you know, it's been a great year for putting a lot of emphasis on that. I think a lot of good has certainly come out of that for sure. I know, Ali, you've probably had that at Heineken.
Oh, definitely. You know, and actually at Heineken USA, we've had a big focus on diversity inclusion at a, what I would call a company level, but also understanding how we would lean in at a brand level. And we do both. At a company level, we have sort of what we call three pillars, which is focusing on our colleagues. So do we have a diverse and representative workforce? And, you know, what's the state of play? What, you know, how do we attract and retain a diverse workforce? Then we have a consumer pillar. So making sure that all our branded content is diverse and inclusive, and, you know, it, right down to things like what sponsorships do we invest, we you know, hold, et cetera. Do they represent the US population? You know, if consumers want to see themselves in our content, but they want to see how our brands show up, be it in consumer experiences, be it if they're watching, you know, Mexican Liga MX or wherever we show up as a brand. And then the last pillar is the community. So what we choose to, where we choose to partner and invest. So for example, Tecate, which has a, you know, 70% of the consumer base is Mexican American. We proactively support charities that, in particular during COVID, because that minority group were severely impacted by COVID, either through job loss, because a lot of them are frontline workers, but also by the actual pandemic in terms of health. So we leaned in very heavily to support charities that would provide food and services to the Mexican American consumers, in particular in Southern California. So that's where we felt there was a great connection between the brand and the communities we need to support and serve.
So I just to pivot slightly, I was just going to ask. So as business leaders, where do you guys stand on you know, a brand going completely the other way to kind of public sentiment and opinion? And actually smiling because we've talked about this before, but the recent story around Basecamp, you know, they made an announcement to basically say we're not doing any woke stuff or whatever they wanted, whatever they said, and they basically went the opposite way to the way that the world's going. It's just, I find that a very interesting stance to take, and I can't remember what the stat was. Did they lose like 40% of their workers or something the next day?
Yeah, they lost like So, you know, I personally think that, you know, we our staff are also our consumers, and you know, we, what they expect as a consumer, they expect as an employee as well, so they have to have a voice. And I think the most important thing is to have those, we call it courageous conversations, because some of the, you know, diversity and inclusion conversations can be uncomfortable, you know, and how do you make sure that you're sensitive to people's feelings, and you know, there's areas that you don't know about, you know, from another person's point of view. If, you know, I'm white and someone's black, like I don't know what they experience, because you know that they are they and they experience them the different things. So but we definitely at Heineken have leaned into having those courageous conversations and putting it on the radar, you know, as a business. I don't know what your point of view is, Ashley, on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's something to be said for transparency, but, you know, taking a stand on an opinion. But, you know, when you have the year that we've had where we just know how important it is for people to have a voice, you know, whether it's deciding what brand they're going to buy or the conversations they're going to have on social or how they're going to interact with each other. It does feel definitely counterproductive, especially in this day and age, to say that you're not allowed to have a voice. I just would think that that probably doesn't make for a very diversity and inclusive environment to work within. And if you're not working within that kind of environment yourself, how are you going to then be able to be a business and work with other people as well? It's a very interesting stand for sure.
We've had a few writers recently, or one in particular that I can think of, that writes a lot about brand tone of voice and how carefully you have to kind of either manage it, or how it's actually changing and evolving. And there's a certain element of being a lot more humble, and not necessarily telling people like it is, but sort of saying, we're trying, we're human, etc. You know, we're not just a corporate face. You know, there's people behind this and we're figuring it out along the way. I think people often buy into that a little bit more then, and they say, like, you know, they didn't get it quite right. They made mistakes. The other day, actually, we were talking about, I think it was Peloton, and they had an ad about a year or so ago that didn't resonate well. And then we were talking about the ways in which they sort of learned from that and kind of bounced back and did lots of things off the back of it. And I think people tend to respect that, right? Because you're kind of, you say, hold your hands up and say, we've made a mistake, but actually we're trying to do all these things to be better. That feels a much better way than not doing anything at all.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Peloton is an amazing example of a company that puts themselves out there and will admit when they haven't got it perfect. And, you know, I know with that ad, you know, 18 months ago, Peloton as a company is so community focused. It is their biggest value is, how do I build community with the people who are, you know, using Peloton? How do they build community with each other? How can we support that community? They do a lot with social issues. And, you know, they haven't been without some controversies and some challenges over the past year. But I definitely think they're going to go down as a case study of a brand that gets it right when they face crisis. I know John Foley, their CEO, is the first one to send an email to all the members, or to go to the press and say, listen, this is what's happened. This is what we're going to do about it. And I think that's really important. I mean, very, very transparent, even when you're not getting it absolutely right. And their community members love them for that. You know, they're very forgiving. If you've put in the time like they have to building community and being genuine and authentic with their consumers, they, we often talk about having a bucket of goodwill, you know, with your clients or with your team members. You know, you put in all the work to have that bucket, but if you have to dip into it every once in a while, it's not empty. You know, it's still, you know, it's gone down a little bit, but you still got that bucket. And so if you're constantly trying to top it up, you know, you can kind of weather that storm that inevitably every single brand's going to face at some point or another.
That sounds a lot like movies, actually. I think I've heard this, like, I listen to a lot of screenwriting podcasts, and it's the same kind of thing where if you're watching a movie and then something happens that doesn't fit with the characters or the narrative, you can forgive a few things if the rest of the film has been doing mostly right stuff. But after a while, there's a certain point at which you lose the audience. And it's kind of, it feels like there's a lot of parallels with marketing, because, you know, marketers are storytellers, etc. I wanted to talk about throwing the word empathy as well. We mentioned transparency, but empathy and kind of the empathetic leader, or those at the top that are kind of showing real empathy, that seems to have been things that have resonated last year. And I feel that it's going to continue to do so this year. And I just kind of wondered what your sort of takes were on kind of the rise of the empathetic leader and the empathetic brand. Is that the sort of, I know I'm throwing around buzzwords here, but does that feel like the sort of best kind of guiding North Star for a brand when they're trying to think of the best way to, you know, stay human and connect with people?
Yes, I think we use that word a lot. You know, understand, being empathetic with our consumers, understanding where they're coming from, but also, you know, with the teams, with our employees, you know, I think it's really important. And what the pandemic has certainly done is you have empathy for people's lives and the way, you know, as we said, with, you know, bringing dogs barking, kids running around, they are a whole person. And and you can also, you know, building that empathy, you know, and our leadership certainly demonstrating it, that they have that, you know, they're juggling multiple things as well. They're not just the business person. So I think it's going to be even more important, especially as people come, you know, we come out of this pandemic, people are assessing what's important to them, and different things are going to become more important. Spending time with family and friends, you know, valuing things that you know, but maybe being less materialistic because you've survived so long without these things. So I think understanding that and having that empathy with our consumers and what's important to them is going to be even more at the forefront as brands continue to communicate with consumers coming out of this pandemic.
Sounds good. We're sort of running almost out of time now, so I just want to wrap up really. But I guess just really fun to ask both of you, and again, I'm straying to kind of snippet soundbite territory, but sort of if you had a kind of a final thought, if you like, as to that, you know, our members and marketing leaders around the world were thinking about, you know, emerging from the pandemic, what's the best way that they can sort of stay, you know, stay human and continue to connect with people in the right way? What would you sort of tell them? Who wants to jump in? Come on, anyone.
I'll jump on. I would say don't stop now. You know, this past year, it's just thrown so much at all of us, and we've had to pivot our marketing plans. We've had to pivot our lives. everything's had to change. But you know, what has come out of that is genuine conversation, really connecting with each other as human beings. And you know, as marketers, and when we talk to our clients, you're on the right path. You're having those conversations, you're listening. Don't stop, just keep going. Really importantly, and Allie mentioned this earlier about listening to consumers, do everything you can to hear what they're saying and just continue to connect.
Sounds good. Any final thoughts, Allie, you want to share?
Well, you know, I think Ashley really hit it on the head, and we talk about, you know, rather than going back to normal, it's the new normal. And let's remember the great things that, you know, there was, you know, wonderful moments during the pandemic where we had human connection, and, you know, what was important, you know, came out with both team members, but also with consumers. So let's have a new normal versus the old normal, I think is important.
Yeah, that sounds good. One of the themes of the society that I've got in our publication coming up is recovery and reinvention, or reinvention and recovery. I keep switching it around, but yeah, same kind of thing where I didn't want to necessarily say go back to a past state of being, but actually it's about reinventing and becoming something new. And learning from the past and all that. So yeah, I just want to say thank you both for coming on the Marketing Society podcast. It was a great chat, and I hope you both enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Really enjoyed it.